on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
I could, but I can't change that. But hey, good news, we've all been there a time or two. And one thing I've learned is it's gonna be hard, but trust me, girl, get up off the back of the road. Let's wipe the tears off your cheeks. Put on a dress and get out that door. Girl, the first shot's on me. Let's jump into a cab downtown. Let a sexy man
entitled The Way It Feels. That was Maddie and Tay with Bathroom Floor. It was released in September of 2019 and marks the first album under their new contract with Mercury Nashville following their record deal with Big Machine Records. You're listening to Night Shift on Phoenix 98 FM, your weekly dose of country music each and every Thursday night, 10 p.m. until midnight. Tonight is a Girls Night In special. For the next 2 hours, I'm going to be playing heartbreak hits and powerhouse ballads from all of the fierce women within country music. Megan Maroney, Kelsey Lamb, Jenna Kramer, just to name a few, are going to have their tracks played later on tonight's broadcast. And of course, if I'm going to be speaking about fierce women in country music, it only makes sense to also talk to a fierce woman who is a trailblazer on the country music scene here in the UK. Kezia Gill is going to be on tonight's Night Shift. She's an artist who is truly at the top of her game. She's not long come home from touring with the likes of Jade Helliwell, Jess Tristan and Demi Mariner on their Girls Night In tour. So we're going to be talking to her about her friendship with the girls and her current single called Quarter Life Crisis. This next artist performed a wonderful set at this year's Holler Saloon stage at this year's CTC Festival. We played most of, if not all, of the tracks of her EP called Man last year when that came out, and now she's back. She's back for a brand new single. This is Carter Faith with Late Bloomer.
You ain't fitting in with girls your age. At 20 something I still feel that way. But I wouldn't have my sense of humor if I wasn't such a late bloomer. Waiting for your hips to come in. Not as pretty as your best friend. Hell, I probably would have gave it up sooner if I wasn't such a late bloomer. They all grow in the spring. What's so special about that? You don't grow like a weed. Is that really
somewhere different, I can't tell. Every set of curtains opens to the open road, and I'm missing you like hell. This fan is like a prison cell, when I know you have gone with her and I can't go back home. I've been American dreaming, oh, 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 I'm American dreaming, oh, oh, oh. But I never seem to get no rest. I should get some rest today, then pack my bags, be on my way. But my mind's always working on the way it could have been. Trying to tow a tightrope line, find a way to feel how fine, without drowning in this wine, calling you again. I've been American dreaming, oh, 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 I'm American dreaming, oh, 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 I'm American dreaming, oh, oh, but I never see. Want to remind me who I am. If I could just get back home to pick up where we left off, I'd take better care of myself. I'd stop drinking from the bottom shelf, but my old wheels keep spinning and I cannot make them stop. I've been American dreaming. Oh, so I'll get back home and try to be someone that's something like me. But I've forgotten all my angels out here in the wind. Sitting idle with my mind, I meditate to pass the time. But there's something inside sitting saying all over again.
Her latest album, Trout of Flowers, that was album opener, American Dreaming. Sierra Ferrell has such a timeless sound, a mixture of Dolly Parton and Loretta Lynn. Her approach to hillbilly music predates bluegrass and country music. I don't think there is a modern artist quite like her. She's been touring left, right and centre across the States, and I really wish she would tour over here soon. Someone who is touring over here, though, later this year, is Megan Maroney. The Tennessee Orange singer-songwriter has been hard at work writing and teasing new songs over on her Instagram in the build-up to her yet-to-be-announced sophomore album, following the success of her debut album called Lucky. This is Megan Maroney with 28th of June.
Danced around the room holding on.
Tuesday.
River running underneath the pine, sweet perfume off a honeysuckle.
when I need something to calm my nerves. Yeah, I just hold you between my fingertips, put you to my lips and get a fix, baby. Be
of the night shift, I have with me Kezia Gill. Kezia, how are you this evening?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on.
I've been really excited. I've been really, really looking forward to this. And I think maybe for some people who, whether they are familiar with you or maybe not familiar with you, I think it might be best to start by rewinding to the very beginning, 2018. And I think even saying 2018, that's not even the beginning. 2018, you released your self-titled debut album, and in the build-up to that, you'd actually been writing for about like 10 or so years. So what was happening in the years leading up to that album?
So I kind of really seriously got into music when I was sort of 17, 18. I'd been performing at gigs and shows since I was a little girl because my dad was a singer. So, you know, as young as 6 or 7, he'd be getting me up to sing. But it was really when I finished college at 18, I really started to take it seriously. I moved to Lanzarote after having been on holiday and I'd been offered a job just on a complete whim. And I ended up sort of being a full-time musician. Started writing my own music, but I think I was in a position where I was earning good money from being a pub singer. I was never really in a position to record or release any of my own music. Plus, the internet was still really in its infancy in terms of being an artist. So YouTube was relatively new. And even though I had YouTube, I didn't necessarily have access to the camera or to video editing software, nothing like what people have access to now. So it was more a case of I'd just write songs and slip one in at the odd gig. But I was really 25 when I kind of thought, if I don't leave this island now, I'll kind of just wake up one day and I'll be 50 and I'll have kind of missed the chance. So I moved back to the UK when I was 25 with the full plan to kind of go, right, full time, going to try my own stuff. very quickly realised that there's no money in original music, certainly not in unknown original music. So then just ended up being a pub singer just back in the UK. I played a lot of pubs and clubs. I was still desperately trying to play and plug my own music. Like, I used to sell original CDs, but I'd maybe sell two or three CDs, and it was always to friends and family. And it was just, I think, you know, come if you fast forward a few years, I think it was 2017 was when I really thought, right, I'm going to do this album and I'm going to try and release it and see if I can get any radio play. And it was just a bit of a perfect storm, really, because I got the Horizon slot for the British CMA at Buckle and Boots Festival, which is an original festival. And that was just the sliding doors moment where my life changed. And suddenly people knew me as Kezia Gill, singer-songwriter, and not Kezia Gill, she sings Mr. Brightside, Down the Dog and Duck on a Friday night. So that's kind of where we are.
You had that kind of experience of Buckle and Boots then helping with that career back in 2018. 2019, you then go to a completely different continent again. You go to Australia. What is the reception to country music like there compared to over here?
It is massive, and I was totally blown away. They have their whole own scene going on, which kind of blew me away. I mean, they still obviously have massive appreciation for American country music, the origin of country music, but they had like huge Australian stars, not just kind of Keith Urban, but their own stars that don't really travel outside of Australia, that are like royalty. And we actually were really fortunate. We went to dinner with a few people, and it was all like, you know, do you know who that is? And I'm like, no. And then you suddenly have a look on Twitter and it's like, oh, they've got 8 million followers. Oh my God. And, you know, someone like Troy Cassidaly, I'd never heard of him, and he was just so nice. But he's like royalty over there. So, yeah, they have a really thriving scene, and it's a place I've only been there once. I'm desperate to go back. There is so much hunger for country music over there. They were so receptive of the British tour that we put on. And, yeah, it's definitely on my to-do list to return.
Now, one thing that you said earlier, which I found really, really sweet, that I really liked hearing you say, was that you cite your dad as one of your biggest influences in your career. And I know that he was also a musician as well. What was the best piece of advice that he ever gave you?
I think he was always very much about authenticity. And he was very much about just do you, because that's, you will do that better than anyone else. And I think as well, he was very aware that I was a woman in a man's world. He was very protective of me, but also incredibly, he wanted me to be able to look after myself. And I yeah. think he gave me the foundations and the building blocks to be able to look after myself. And he actually said to me once, I remember it very well, we were at a fair. He'd come on holiday over to Lanzarote. I think I was about 22 at the time. And I was with my husband now, Lloyd. We've been dating about 3 years, and I think an engagement was on the cards, and we were kind of talking about it, and my dad just sort of said to me, you know, you're going to have to make choices in life that I never had to make. You're going to have to choose a marriage, a house, children, or a career. He said, I never had to make those decisions, he says, and I'm seeing now that you're going to have to make those calls. And it was, I'll never forget the conversation, because it was really sobering to hear him say that to me. And I think every day I kind of have to be just work a little harder as a woman in the music industry, and just be a little bit feistier, but also not too feisty that you then become a diva. And it's always just something that Dad taught me, be authentic and stand up for yourself, and you'll be okay. So I keep that very close.
And I think, like you said there, like, you've got to be confident enough, but not too confident while you're a diva. It's such a fragile balance that it is very, very difficult to walk on. I can imagine for your dad as well that he was maybe someone who you probably played your songs to first, especially with him being a musician as well. Did he have a particular favourite track?
Well, my dad was quite a hard man. It was from Irish descent, so emotion wasn't really something my dad did. So actually, as much as he was my muse, it was always my mum that I took my music to, because my mum would always be that emotive side. Yeah. But what was funny is, in Dad's older years, like, he was always, I don't like to use the word tyrant, but he ran a strict house. he was like the old school man of the house. And it was in his older years when he kind of became a granddad and he got a little older and slightly ill of health, that he kind of mellowed out a lot. And a song that he could never, ever listen to me sing because it used to make him emotional was Local Man Star, which I wrote about and for him. And even though he'd never say to me, "It means a great deal that you wrote that for me," whenever I played that song, he had to leave the room. He'd been chopping onions.
His hair was black, the darkest black, and his voice was velvet smooth. Ran away from home, did it on his own. Just a young man with nothing to lose. They came from afar to hear his 12-string guitar and to hear that angel sing. And year after year, the crowds would cheer. They came.
Very, very fortunate enough, I saw your Girls Night In show at London Bush Hall. And can I just say, me and my friend Florence had literally the best night ever, because not only was the music great, it was such a good mixture of set lists, of a good mixture of sad songs, of fast songs, of happy songs, of slow songs. But the kind of relationship that you kind of see between you, Demi, Jess and Jade is absolutely hilarious. You all compliment each other so well, and it's like friendship soulmate kind of thing going on. And I think it's very, very clear as well that you can see it's very authentic as well, the bond that you have between the girls. What was the pivotal moment then where you thought, these aren't just other artists I'm working with, these are actually my friends?
I think it kind of, it lends itself to what I literally just said. It's a very male dominated industry, the music industry. Everything from not only the artists, but sound crews, house crew, management, like it's all very male. So to find not only females that do the same thing that I do, but that do the same genre, that are songwriters, that are badass women, that are kind of doing everything I'm trying to do. And I found them kind of through different festivals. I met Jade first at Buckle and Boots Festival. She was also on the Australia tour. You know, nothing says bonding session like a 32-hour journey. You know, we really got to know each other on that trip. And then she was friends already with Jess and Demi. It was a case of like, I think you girls are going to get on. So whenever we were at festivals, we'd always find ourselves at the bar laughing, usually moaning about the lack of mirrors in the dressing room, or the fact that we had to share the toilets with the boys and there was no Lucy, or, you know, just the things that as a woman, like, are just constant. And we found ourselves gelling over these things. And then it was thrown into the mix that, do you know what, we should pick our quietest month, which is always January, and we should go on a little weekend away. And we booked the hot tub cottage, which became the stuff of legend. And it was during that break that I think, during a boozy night in the hot tub, we were like, we should totally go on tour. Like, people would totally buy tickets for that. And it was a total roll of the dice. We actually didn't know how successful it would be. But, you know, thank God for wine and thank God for hot tubs, because without them, we would never have done it.
I think what was interesting to learn from the show is, when I was watching people watch you guys, is people kind of realise that there's a whole world of co-writing, that there's this whole world of collaboration that happens behind the scenes, whether it's, you know, you've written a song and you've taken it to a producer, or maybe you've co-written a song with someone. Is there anyone who, whether it's a songwriter or producer, that you'd like to work with? And if there is a particular person, what kind of track would you hope to maybe make with them?
Well, recently I went to Nashville with my husband, and I went for songwriting. So I went to do some co-writes, and I met a lady called Terry Jo Box. And she has recently won a CMA for the work she's done with Lainey Wilson. She also writes with Ashley McBride. Now, Ashley McBride and Lainey Wilson are two phenomenal artists. I literally idolise the two of them. But they are part of a team that makes that music come to life. So it's not just Ashley or Lainey sitting writing in the notebook. You know, it's a whole team of people. And Terry Jo Box is one of those ladies. And I saw her in a songwriter round in Nashville, where you get three songs, and the three songs that she sang were two number ones by Lainey Wilson and one by Ashley McBride. And I literally turned to my husband and I was like, that is a slam dunk. I was like, if I could write with anyone right now, it would be that woman. So, you know, again, I've put her in my manifestation box. I've written her name down. I would love to write with Terry Jo.
Now, one of the very first songs of yours that I ever heard was Whiskey Over Ice. And it's such a sound out track from your Misfits album, which you released just last year. It currently has just under 500,000 streams on Spotify. Could you ever predict that that song would catch the attention of that many people?
I mean, absolutely not. You never know. It's funny, I've released songs and really thought, oh, you know what, I think this might do well. And it's not. It's essentially what we call in the industry, it's flopped. It's not hit the algorithm. It's not hit the playlisting. And then you get a song like Whiskey Over Ice, which, don't get me wrong, I loved that song. The story behind that is it was never actually meant for me to keep. I wrote that song for what we call library albums. So it goes out to film, TV, YouTube, advertising.
Okay.
As soon as I'd written the song, I said to my producer who I was working with, can I keep this one? And he was like, it's not really the done thing, but yeah, we'll hold this one back. And I was like, I think this one might have legs as a Kezia Gill track. And the minute we released it, it went straight to number one. It had a huge reception, and it continues to be the one that's added to playlists. Funnily enough, I actually played that song in Nashville, and a girl from the audience came up to me and she was like, I literally have this song on my Spotify. I listen to it all the time. And she was like, she was from America. She'd never met me. She was like, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And I was like, I can't believe you know my song. So yeah, you just never know, but it's always a great feeling when it happens.
Isn't it all a bit crazy the way this feels? From the minute you called me baby, I was head over heels. It's like I've known you my whole life, but I just learned your name. I'm getting drunk on you. I'm not feeling quite so single, sharing a double or two. I'm gonna put another quarter in the jukebox. Can I have this dance?
Interesting what you were saying earlier when you saw about your Australian tour, how in Australia they kind of have like their own Australian royal family of country music, because it's, I would say it's very, very different over here. I feel like the way some country fans, not all, but some country fans respond to our own UK artists can be very, very mixed. I mean, a few weeks ago I put what was probably my most like feather rustling moment on a Facebook group, and it always happens on a Facebook group. I put on there about how would people feel about seeing a British artist on the arena stage at the CTC Festival, or even on the spotlight stage inside the arena space. And there was such a mixed reaction, and it was such a wide spectrum of reactions. I think one person put, which I thought was probably the most interesting thing, is when an artist gets big, when an artist can play, where can an artist play after they've gotten so big? From a pop-up stage, where can they go after that if people don't feel like they're welcomed enough into the arena onto spotlight stage? It will probably encourage them to probably leave the country genre altogether. And what's your kind of take on that? Because your Spotify streaming numbers are going up. When I went to see your show in London Bush Hall, that was a really, really packed out show.
and the numbers are there. So how do you think that your next steps would be when it does come to the kind of festival scene?
Well, it's really interesting because it was off the back of your post and that reaction that I put my own post up on a separate channel, because I really didn't want to just go straight into that Facebook group, which can be quite negative. I went on my own sort of TikTok socials and just sort of said exactly what you just said. What is our ceiling? As someone that is selling out shows, going to number one on the iTunes chart, that is writing in Nashville, that is producing good music, what is my ceiling? Because if it's playing the pop-up stage, then I've done that, tick. You know, if it's opening up for Bruce Springsteen, tick, I've done that. What next? And if this was the video then that somebody decided to share in the Facebook group. And it, do you know what? What I must say is there was a lot of support for what I'd said. And equally, people were like, you know, we don't pay that kind of money to see British artists. And I was just like, well, I'd have loved to have heard you say that to David Bowie, or the Rolling Stones, or Rod Stewart, or Freddie Mercury, because Britain is known for its iconic music history. And yes, we are not the origin of country music, but neither is America. It was taken from folk music, from the Appalachian Mountains, and from the settlers that found America. It's from all over the world. We have our own folk music. We have our own country music. No one can claim music. It doesn't work like that. The Americans do it very well. Absolutely. I'm not disputing that. But that doesn't mean that we can't do it well. And I just feel like, I think somebody shared that like my monthly listeners or downloads versus Kane Brown's, who headlined. And obviously his are like 50-fold. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not professing to be like Kane Brown.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is maybe one day I will be. And on that day, will you accept me on the main stage? So I'm all about it. I'm flying the Union Jack all the way to Nashville. And I'm very proud of being a British artist. I don't feel like I need to up and move to Nashville. I don't feel like I need to, you know, buy a truck and wear a cowboy hat and pretend to be anything other than a British artist. I'm very proud of my heritage. I have Irish heritage. I have British roots. And I love country music. And here's to that. And anyone that thinks I don't have a place, I'll just say, we'll go to the bar when I'm on.
And I think it's interesting what you said there about like your own influence of music. I know that you have a heritage of Irish music and you've been really honing in on that on social media. I mean, last week on our show, we had James Dunn, whose parents are also from Ireland. And I think there's always been such a strong and a long connection between Irish music and country music, especially over here. And I think especially when you consider the Irish immigration over to the States, I mean, that's kind of where a lot of stems of country music that we hear today come from. What then urged you to go down that path of history? And when did you learn to play the tin whistle? I've been seeing a lot of tin whistle videos as well.
Well, it was a really happy accident. I've been playing the tin whistle since I was a little girl. And some of my first real experience in music was Irish. So we'd go to what they call Irish traditional sessions. I was sort of as young as 8 or 9. We'd sing Irish folk music. I'd play the whistle. I'd play the guitar. It's where I really learned to play guitar, because with Irish rhythm guitar, you have to be everything. You have to be the percussion. You have to be the lead. You have to be the rhythm. And I really learned how to do that with Irish music. And then sort of I've always played the penny whistle on and off. I've put it on different songs. I've put it in different shows. But obviously, it's not like a key instrument. It's not something I can just, you know, whip out in the middle of a band show. And it was only due to the fact that we've just celebrated St. Patrick's Day, 17th of March. And I said to Lloyd, just because it falls on a Sunday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to put an Irish spin on country songs. So I did Tennessee Whiskey, I did Country Roads and I did Jolene. And it just so happens that Country Roads has had 1.7 million views. It's just gone mad. And obviously the thing is, when it comes, I think my Instagram listeners went up by 15,000 in about 2 days. And I was like, well, suddenly I've got 15,000 people that are here for the whistle. They don't know who I am. They don't care that I've just released Misfit. They don't care that I've won British CMAs. They're here for the whistle. So I'm just going to keep doing it until it gets boring. So literally since the 17th of March, I've been alternating whistle covers with acoustic covers. And my plan is to eventually start putting in my own songs and trying to hold some of the people that have just come for the whistle. But it's amazing how the internet works. I mean, 20 years of being a country singer-songwriter and trying to get out of the 200-view jail, and suddenly I whack a bit of penny whistle on and the internet breaks. it's just crazy.
And outside of that, you do actually have a single currently out, and it's a single called Quarter Life Crisis, which I absolutely love. And I think it speaks on behalf of all generations. I think each generation definitely has a quarter life crisis. They just address it very, very differently. And you worked on this track with Ward Thomas, who are absolutely brilliant. Another good example of a very successful British act. How did that collaboration come about?
It was really sweet. The girls actually approached me, which is something I never thought would happen. They'd been sitting on this song for quite a few years themselves. And it's really funny because the way the song is written, I think it's like, you know, I'm 24 and hopefully by the time I'm 28, I'll have things figured out. And both the girls are older than that now. I'm older than them, you know, again. And I kind of said to them, I'm definitely too old to release this song with you. We were like, no, we love the irony of it. Because I released a song called 30s, which again was embracing that you're not young, but you're not old. And yeah. It's that kind of, yes, I do prefer flat shoes now and I like to be in on a Saturday night, but, you know, don't bury me yet. And I think that's what's really relatable about Quarter Life Crisis. It's like, you know, I always figured I'd have it all sorted out by the time I was a bit older, but actually I don't think we ever have it figured out. I think there's always a time in our life when we're sat skin eating pizza on the bathroom floor. I think that's in all of us, and I love the girls that they asked me to do that, and it was a super fun project to be part of.
Now, what words of wisdom would you share towards anyone who is going through a quarter life crisis, you know, asking for a friend?
I don't know about words of advice. I would say, like, can anyone advise me what the hell is going on? Do you know what? I think harping back to my dad's advice, I think as long as you are authentic, you do you. It doesn't matter what age you are, that you'll be doing it right. I think when people try and be something they're not, it turns around to bite them. You know, yeah. If you're trying to live this big flash spenny lifestyle and you skin, like, just call a spade, I'm skin. I just think be honest, be true. People will love you for it. You know, do the whole no makeup thing. Do the whole, just be authentic. And then it doesn't matter what age you are, you're doing it right.
Now, we've got to play that very track for our listeners now. Would you like to introduce the track?
Absolutely. Hi, I'm Kezia Gill, and you're listening to The Night Shift on Phoenix 98 FM. And this is my latest single, Quarter Life Crisis.
Birthday cake and Hendrix gin. Feels like I got here a whole lot quicker than I thought I would when I was a kid. Thought I'd feel older, thought I'd be rich, but it's takeout pizza and boxed red wine. Two digits in the bank any given time. Paying taxes sure is a bitch. Thought I'd be married, thought I'd have kids. Ooh, ooh, I thought at 24 I'd have my shit together more. In a four-bedroom, my friends got jobs straight out of school. I'm spending more than my minimum wage. Waking up early, staying out late. Ooh, ooh, maybe by 28 I'll feel like I found my place. This is my quarter. Trying to grab the ball by the horns and ride.
Gill on The Night Shift with her latest single called Quarter Life Crisis, featuring Ward Thomas. You can follow Kezia over on Instagram to keep up with her latest Irish interpretations of classic country hits at Kezia Gill Music. Be sure to tune in again next week, where I'll be joined by Black Deer Festival founder Jill T to discuss her history within music, entertainment and events, as well as to discuss Black Deer Festival headliner Sheryl Crow. Jenna Kramer began her musical career back in 2012 and has released two albums since: the self-titled debut album Jenna Kramer in 2012 and the album 31 back in 2015. Both albums produced 7 charted singles on the Hot Country Songs chart and Country Airplay, including the top 10 hits Why You Wanna and I Got the Boy. This is Jenna Kramer playing for you now on The Night Shift with a track called Good Time Coming On.